the show that's focused on investing strategies for today's needs and tomorrow's goals. This is Bucket Strategy Investing, presented by the Wealth Advisors at Lucia Capital Group. Now, here are Johnny Dean and Rick the Professor Plum.
Yeah, welcome to the program. It is Bucket Strategy Investing. It's all about the Bucket Strategy and giving you the best of money information. You are tuned in to the one TV and, of course, radio program that gives you the strategies that you need, and I would suggest the one that offers, in my opinion, the best money advice anywhere, anytime. We're here for you every day, right here at the same time. I'm Johnny Dean. This hour, Professor Plum and I are going to be getting into the topic of target date funds as we try once again to clear up some of the hype that seems to be surrounding target date funds. And we'll tell you why the hype is there, and we'll tell you why you probably shouldn't believe it. Not necessarily. We're going to tell you what they are, and we'll talk about why they don't necessarily do the job that they're intended to do. Or maybe they do. Huh? Do they? All right. Well, that's all coming up ahead. And more with me and Professor Rick Plum. Steve Allendorf's going to join us, our loan financial planner. That's coming up at 21 after the hour. He's going to be talking about some of the documentation that you need from last year. Now, 2015, of course, is over, but some of the things, if you're refinancing or getting a loan for this year, you're going to need some of the stuff, in fact, a lot of the stuff from last year. So he'll tell you what you need, and we'll talk about rates and all that stuff. If you got a question for the Brain Trust, you just give us a call right now. Our studio number, our hotline is open, 877-PLANNER. PLANNER. Lines are open. The show is just getting underway, so give us a call. Emails, well, you know what to do. You get those to us at wealthed.com. You click on the Find Your Answer link. The Professor of Plum, he's our main brain trust advisor. He's here with me, courtesy of the wonderful people at Lucia Capital Group who bring you this hour of the show. If you need a buckets plan, put together a strategy, one that specifically fits your goals, you can call the professor or anyone at Lucia Capital Group at their number off the air, 800-644-1150. Preparing yourself for whatever might happen, that's one of the major keys to a successful retirement plan. Of course, you need to make sure you have a plan for whatever might happen down the line. Once again, the number at Lucia Capital Group, 800-644-1150. And our number, in case you missed it, after all these years, 877-PLANNER, PLANNER, 877-752-6637. Target date funds, Professor Plum. Now, we need to talk about these, but we got to say something first.
You have to.
Thought maybe you could join me. That's all right. I'll do it myself, okay? All right, just you got to get this out of the way because all the lawyers and everything, they told us to say this. But you do need to listen to this. It's important. Before investing, you have to carefully consider a target date fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses, all right? To obtain a prospectus or summary prospectus, which contains this and other information, call your financial advisor. Read the prospectus carefully before investing. Now, target date funds are subject to the volatility of the financial markets, including equity and fixed income investments in the U.S. and abroad, and may be subject to risks associated with investing in high yield, small cap, and commodity related foreign securities. Principal invested is not guaranteed at any time, including at or after target dates, which is absolutely true. Plum, wake up, buddy. Did you not enjoy that?
Oh, yeah. Highlight of my day. Highlight of my day.
Well, this is the stuff, if you're going to read about target funds or you're going to invest in those things, I mean, you're going to get something that tells you that anyway. So, yes, it's true. Nothing is guaranteed.
And you do need to understand that having a target date fund, even one that has a short target date, doesn't take away risk.
Right. So let's for those that don't know, define what a target date fund is.
A target date fund is an asset allocation fund that is designed around a specific time horizon identified by this date that they put on it. Typically, they're done in five-year increments, the 2015, 2020, 2025, and so on. And the idea is that the diversification, the allocation within the portfolio, moves more from the aggressive, more volatile side of the equity, you know, more allocation to equity markets, to a more conservative, less volatile bond and other type of investment markets when you get closer to that target date. Now, that doesn't mean that when you get to the target date that there's no risk in it. You know, if I were in a 2015 fund right now, that's not a bank account. There is still an asset allocation of financial instruments, bonds and stocks. It's just that when you get closer to that target date, it tends to be much more heavily invested in bond and other bond alternative type investments rather than stock or stock alternative investments. The long-term target dates tend to be more invested in the equity, the growth type investments, because long-term time horizons are looked upon as a growth investment. Short-term time horizons are looked at more as a more conservative, lower volatility type investment. Now, how they get there, unfortunately, is very different from one family that has a 2020 fund to a different family that has a 2020 fund. There is no standardized allocation for a 2020 fund, 2030, whatever the case may be. It's up to the interpretation and the management of the individual fund managers to determine what they see as being an appropriate mix for a 2020, a 2030, and so on down the line. So it's difficult to compare them side to side. They are becoming very, very popular. And most 401k, especially the larger the 401k, the more likely it'll be in there. That's their, you know, fund of choice, you know, these different allocation funds.
Why, and, though? Is it because it's easy? Is it because it's self-sustaining? What?
Well, the thought process is that people don't use their 401k because they don't understand the options. Or people don't put their money into the mutual fund growth options, even though they have a long-term time horizon, because they're wary of risk and they're wary of losing money. So they tend to move towards the more, you know, the stable value funds, which are more on the guaranteed side. Stable value fund would be very little risk, because they don't understand or accept the risk of the market. So by creating something that is tailored around a specific date, it's a lot easier to potentially, at least they think it is, mm-hmm. to understand what's going on with this. If I'm going to retire in 25 years, you know, a 2040 fund sounds, well, that's my time horizon. That's perfect. I'll let them do it. It becomes very attractive for a lot of individuals in 401ks because they think somebody else is doing the work for them, and they now, so it has, I think, increased the participation, which I think is a wonderful thing in 401ks. It has increased the allocation towards more, you know, especially the longer term side of the house. But I think people use it as an all encompassing, everything be all to everybody default.
Yeah. So the idea behind them is, I would say I want to retire 30 years from now. Okay. So I will pick 2045 fund, and they go in 5-year increments. So I would take a 2045 fund, and I would say, just what, dump all my money in this? Is this what people are saying? Or put a substantial portion?
And now I don't have to make any investment decisions,
because they're being made
for the rest, assuming I actually stayed with this company for 30 years. I don't have to worry about what's happening, because it's all being handled for me. It's being changed as I get closer to 5 years in, 10 years, 20 years, 30 years, as I get closer to my retirement date, that 2045, it should become available as a more secure retirement fund, because it's automatically changing on my behalf. So, but that's a little bit naive, and it's a little bit short-sighted, especially once you do get to retirement or close to retirement. I mentioned earlier, it doesn't take away all the risk. We looked at what happened in 2008. Now, if you were in 2000, 2005, you're thinking, okay, I'm going to retire in 5 years, at 2010. I would be using a 2010 target date fund from 2005. You know, I may have been using it all the way since 2000. And then in 2008, I'm only 2 years away from retirement. So I would assume that a portfolio that is designed to start sending me money in a less than a 2-year period of time, potentially, would be relatively conservative. Well, then 2008 happened, and the average fund, target date fund with a 2010 name on it, went down
22%, according to Morningstar, that gave us this particular stat, was that the average in 2008 funds with the 2000 to 2010 time horizon.
Oh, that include the ones from 2000?
Yes.
So 2000, that's behind me. That should be really safe.
Well, you would think so. 2000 to 2010 lost an average of 22%, according to Morningstar.
So a 2005 fund, meaning I planned on retiring in 2005, I was retired, and now that's my source of income.
Yes.
My fund, my portfolio in this case, went down by 22%. And that's a portfolio that presumably I'm drawing an income from. I just shot myself in the foot. That's what is a problem with these funds. Now, they do work in some areas. My kids are starting off in their careers in their young 20s, and they're using, because they're putting in, what, $100 a paycheck? They're not putting in large sums of money to be able to have, you know, five or six or eight different specific choices. Where we can put $3 into an emerging market fund out of every paycheck. So while the accounts are relatively small, they're using the 2055 or whatever the longest target date is out there, because they're getting a good allocation. And when it's that far in the future, it's like 98% in stock type, you know, mutual fund investments anyway, which is what they should have.
Right. When you've got a 45-year time horizon between now and retirement, that's plenty of time normally to allow the stock market to do whatever it's going to do over that period of time.
But that doesn't mean the 2045 and 55 funds are only for the 20-year-olds.
No, exactly. All right. Now, we're going to excuse Professor Plum. We'll bring him back at the bottom of the hour. We're going to talk with Steve Allendorf on our Tuesday Loan Financial Planner segment, talking to you about mortgages. More on this and other stuff coming up on Bucket Strategy Investing. Get the motors running, head out on the highway. Actually, you don't have to do anything. You just stay right where you are. Our loan financial planner, Steve Allendorf, joins me here on Bucket Strategy Investing for a few minutes, talking about your loans, your mortgages, and all that stuff as he does every Tuesday. If you want to get in touch with Steve, his phone number is 888-563-1070. All across the country, 888-563-1070, loan, L-O-A-N, financialplanner.com. Good way to get a hold of Steve through the website. Steve, nice to have you back once again. I love to look at the 10-year. I've been looking at it for a long time. It was supposed to go sky high, or whatever people said after the Fed raised interest rates. Obviously, there's no connection really between the two, no direct connection. We're down still around 2% right now.
Yeah, so long-term rates have held steady. We had a slight move up when the Feds made their move mm-hmm. in December. You know, they moved back down a little bit. You know, we can still look at with, you know, low loan to value, good credit scores, mm-hmm. rates 4% or below. I've got one jumbo investor on a purchase, high credit scores. So I've got a client right now looking to do a purchase, 20% down, 790 credit scores, and we're looking at 3.75 at 0 points on a jumbo 30-year loan.
Zero points.
Correct. So rates are real good there. We've talked about 7-year loans. I have one lender that will do a purchase 7-year, whether it be fully amortized or interest only, anywhere between maybe 3 and 3.5%. So rates are still phenomenal, and those type of options are really good to look at when you're looking to do a purchase or a refinance.
Yes, and we keep saying they're going to go up, and they will go up at some point, but right now they're still doing fairly well. People want to do, they're looking now at refi. They're looking at purchases. It's a good time perhaps to do that. Now, we need to know what they need. You know, you don't have your, most likely don't have your 2015 taxes done yet.
Correct.
At this point, nor may you have, you know, all the statements that you need. So,
but
so
we're
going to
get
go?
Them. We're going to get them here pretty soon. Yeah. Potentially the tax returns, of course, aren't required to be done until the 15th of April. But as far as your W-2s, as far as your 1099s, if you're on retirement, you'll get your 1099s for any retirement, you know, disbursement that you've had during the year. Those people that are on Social Security, although there wasn't any change from 15 to 16, mm-hmm. around November, December, if you're on Social Security, you get what's called the COLA statement, cost of living allowance increase. It's an 8.5 by 14 perforation. When you're applying for a loan now, you want to make sure that when you get these documents in the mail, majority of the W-2s and the 1099s are due into January. I do have a lot of clients that have K-1s. A lot of times those don't come in
July.
should come in by no later than the end of February.
Yeah.
But in applying for a mortgage loan now, it's real important that not only do you accumulate and save that info, but for instance, let's assume that you're W-2 and you earn bonus or commission throughout the year. I can use bonus or overtime income if I have a 2-year average. So instead of having us have to wait to really know what your income is by sending out a verification of employment after you supply all your documentation, one of the other documents that's real important for you to always keep, if you throw out all of your pay stubs, the most important one to keep is the year-end pay stub. Because the year-end pay stub will show your gross you know, W-2 salary or hourly wages. It'll show your gross overtime. It'll show your gross bonus. And if you can supply your year-end 2014, year-end 2015 pay stub, that may make a difference of us being able to use an extra $300, $500, $800,000 a month to help you qualify. So I'm working on a loan right now where the borrowers were turned down by another lender, but the other lender didn't go to the extent of accumulating the bonus income for the borrower.
They were turned down because they didn't have enough income.
Correct, yeah. And the lender didn't ask for the proper documentation. So right off the bat, I was able to get year-end 2014 year-end 2015 pay stub, showing an extra $300, $400, $500 a month in income that I was able to use in qualifying to put us in position now where I can do the loan where the other lender wasn't able to do it.
And what about self-employed people? You know, they've got Schedule C type income. Where do they, they don't have the returns done yet, perhaps. What can they do?
Okay, so let's assume that you're either self-employed, Schedule C. You have a corporation where you file corporate returns. A lot of people that file corporate returns will pay themselves a salary. So, of course, you'll have pay stubs and a W-2. Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac allow us, mostly Freddie Mac, allows us to use 1 year of tax returns. So let's assume last year you went in to look to do a refi or a purchase. You weren't able to do it. You weren't able to get as much as you wanted. Then we could potentially use the 15 returns once you get them completed. So you may have to wait till the end of February to get all your documentation. If you're looking to do a purchase or a refinance, if you're self-employed, have a corporation, and you may need that income for 15 to qualify,
yeah,
it's real important to get those returns done as quickly as possible.
Okay, so now as I recall doing my refi, this was with you 3 or 4 years ago. It was about at the same time, but we had to wait until the returns had not only been filed but accepted by the IRS. And that had to be verified, and that could take 6 weeks, 8 weeks, whatever it happens to be. So is there a way around that?
Yes, I mean, at this time, we have a little bit more flexibility. So let's assume we have to use the 15 returns. You've set up the 15 returns. You want to make sure that you e-file them, and we can get verification that they've been e-filed. A lot of times I can get by using that versus having to wait for the IRS to give us what's called the IRS transcript. So what happens is when you submit the returns in, IRS gets your information, type all of your information into a system, and then you come up with transcripts. Sometimes you can go down directly to the IRS office to submit your returns and get the stamp.
I've done that too. Yes.
Now what's really important is if you owe any money, you have to pay that money. So if you're looking to do a mortgage loan, you've done your 15 returns, you need to use those returns to qualify, and you owe $2,000, $3,000.
In taxes, you're saying.
You need to make sure you get that paid. Otherwise, we can't do the transaction and use those returns until that amount is paid.
Really? And why is that? Because they want to make sure that you're what? I mean, is that because it's an extra bill you have?
Correct. They want to make sure that the IRS obligation is taken care of.
Oh, because at some point, if you didn't pay that, then it becomes an even bigger burden.
It could be
that.
If you go and you say, okay, I've got to do payments, then it becomes a payment. So we're not getting all of that proper documentation if we can't verify the payment.
So you're able to, we only got a minute, but if you're able to look at somebody's return perhaps as before they send it. And
I have about 5 or 6 clients right now who I've reviewed their 14 returns. It looks like we're going to need their 15 returns to qualify. So Schedule C, corporation, I've got some clients that have a combination of that with 4 or 5 rental properties. And what I've requested them to do is to put the final draft together. Let me review the draft before they do the final submission, in case they've got to tweak the returns a little bit.
Show
in order
more
for us,
income or less expenses, whatever it is.
Correct, in order for us to qualify to do the mortgage loan. If we don't have your returns, then on a Schedule C, we'll need a P&L for 2015.
Profit and loss, right.
And if you're a corporation, we'll need both the profit and loss and a balance sheet. But these are things that you can call me up on and I can review we know what we need to put
together.
That's
it. That's why you talk to Steve, 888-563-1070, Steve Allendorf, or loanfinancialplanner.com. Steve, talk to you again next week.
Always a pleasure.
Thank you, sir. Johnny Dean, Professor Plum returns right after this. I feel like I should have the medals, the big curly hair, you know, some sideburns here.
Maybe a SWAT van, too. This sounds like the beginning.
Doesn't this sound like it?
The beginning of SWAT.
It really does.
That from from the 70s, was it?
Oh, that was that reeked of 70s. Anyway, welcome back to the program. Johnny Dean, Professor Rick Plum, back with me. 877-PLANNER. We got some lines open right now. So if you have a money question of any kind, doesn't matter what it is, you give us a call. We'll talk to you about it. We'll answer it for you right here on the show. I should mention, too, that we've got answers coming up in person for you at one of the many workshops that are happening, the 2016, presented by Lucia Capital Group, the 2016 Retirement Income Strategies Workshops. Now, the next one is Saturday, February 20th. That's in Las Vegas, Nevada. If you're in Las Vegas, you join us. It's less than a month away, but write it down, give us a call, or go to wealthed.com, sign up. It's free. You get to meet Professor Plum and all the other advisors there. In Las Vegas. So that's the 20th of February, Saturday, February 27th, Seattle, Washington, and then Saturday, March 12th, Phoenix, Arizona. Las Vegas, Seattle, and Phoenix. Those are the next three. We'd love to have you join us. Once again, go to wealthed.com, wealthed.com to sign up. It's all free. Can't believe the spring series is here already. More cities, by the way, available to you at wealthed.com, where the Brain Trust will be hanging out through, I think, at least through the middle of April. Okay, 877-PLANNER, our number, PLANNER, 877-752-6637. We were talking before Steve joined us, we were talking about target date funds. And you mentioned, Professor Plum, that it's good, they can be good for young people if they're going out till 2055.
Or whatever the longest
whatever it is, yes. I don't know what it is. But if you've got 30 years, 35, even 20, 25 years, that's plenty of time for things to happen.
Right, and it makes a lot of sense for small accounts and small contribution amounts to have that proper diversification and be able to, you know, have the long-term time perspective and have diversification rather than, you know, putting 3% of $100, you know, into an emerging markets fund. So you put, what, $3 in every paycheck? It works better in the fund of funds, the target date fund for those younger individuals or for people just starting off. Now, you don't have to be 22, 23, 24 years old to have that time horizon. It could be that you are just starting a new company. You've had a 401k before, and you had multiple options, and you've built up money, and you either left it at the old 401k, and now you've moved on to a new company. You're just starting your new 401k. So this money should be invested, even though you're 50 years old now, and you don't have a 40-year time horizon. A 2055 fund may still work for you because you're starting with no money in your plan and you want to use the volatility that the market gives you that will be there. Volatility is one of those things that we can't count on much from the market, but we can count on volatility, and the volatility can help us as we're going along dollar cost averaging from our paychecks. It would have been nice to have no money in the market starting about 6 months ago and just be buying in for the last 6 months because it's become a very good pricing, at least from what we've seen. Could go lower, but now's a great time to be buying in. So use that for the long-term money, even if you don't have a super long-term, because maybe you've taken care of the shorter-term needs, the moderate needs, the intermediate-term needs through other sources. Or maybe you are in a 401k. This is your only 401k. This is your only investment portfolio. Having you could use multiple target date funds. Put some money into a moderate portfolio, but dollar cost average into the more aggressive longer term one. Take advantage of the volatility with new money going in, safen up or make more conservative, less volatile existing money. So there are ways to use it, but it should not be a one fund, set it and forget it, never look back until you retire type of fund. It is helpful. It does make things easier for a lot of people, But it's not so easy that you don't have to at least spend a few minutes thinking about time horizons, risk tolerance, and other things. So we need to use it to our advantage to satisfy what we're trying to accomplish. And there is no one fund, really, that does it all, unless you're like that 21-year-old that's starting their 401k today.
Yeah, exactly. So there are ways that people who are in their 50s could use it, people who are approaching retirement, as part of a bucket strategy. It may not be the way it was originally intended, but... It works okay. It can. Certainly, though, check with your advisor, because as we said, yes, there are risks. As Professor Plum mentioned, 2008... the funds with the 2000 to 2010 time span lost an average of 22%, according to Morningstar. So things you got to look out for. All right, let's get back to the phone lines. 877-PLANNER. We want to take some calls. 877-752-6637. I know a couple people hung up, so give us a call back. But we'll go next to Vicki in Houston, Texas. Hi, Vicki.
Hi, how are you?
Very well, thank you. How are you?
Good, thank you. I'm calling with a Social Security question. I'm 64. My husband will be 66 in April. So he's going to file in suspense. Or is that the right thing to do? That's number one. Number two, can I take my benefit, you know, just get mine, which is a lot less than his, less than half, and then at 70, take half of his? Can I do it the opposite of what most people do?
Well, yes and no. Let's talk about what's going on. He's going to file and suspend as of April. Now, because he will be full retirement age in April, he does still have that option. And since you've mentioned that his is the larger one, that can make sense as long as one of you has some longevity. Does one of you, at least one of you, expect to live well into your 80s and beyond maybe? Okay, then that makes a lot of sense. For some of you can afford to postpone it. He files and suspends. But this is going to do something a little bit different. You don't have to wait until he's 70 to pick up his benefit or part of his benefit, maybe. Because the spousal benefit that you would be applying for from his work record is not based on what he will receive at age 70. It's based on his full retirement age benefit. So waiting until he starts his benefit at age 70 doesn't do you any good. You just need to wait, you know, until he applies, and then you may be able to apply then. The spousal retirement benefit is based on his full retirement age benefit, but then it's reduced if you are under full retirement age when you apply. Now, you said it's less than half. Is it a lot less than half, or is it only a little bit less than half?
$400 a month.
$400, and his is probably closer to $25.
When
you apply for your benefit, if you were to apply for your benefit at 64, you would receive a reduced benefit. Instead of $400, you may receive like $325. And at that time, if he has already applied for his benefit and suspended it, you can apply for a spousal benefit that'll be around $1,100 a month. So you would end up getting, call it $300 a month from your own benefit and maybe $700 or $800 a month from a spousal benefit starting as soon as he files and suspends. And it's not going to grow that much from 64 to 66. And it won't grow at all from 66 to 70, your age. Oh. You know. So you want to do this sooner rather than later. Now, if you wanted to get the full 50% number, or let me ask one other question. Are you working?
No.
Okay, good. If you were working, it might throw a little monkey wrench into the system here. But you can apply for yours now. It's a reduced benefit. And as soon as he files and suspends in April, you can apply for a reduced spousal benefit. But that reduced spousal benefit will still be more than your own by quite a large number. So you'll start getting that spousal benefit, although slightly reduced, early. And then, unfortunately, if he passes away or when he passes away, you'll stop, assuming that he doesn't pass away until after he turns 70, you start receiving his full age 70 benefit. You lose yours, but you pick up his 70 benefit. And so that's where the waiting until 70 really comes in nice for your situation. You're younger than him, and women tend to live longer. So that benefit of his will last quite a while.
Yeah.
So okay. I would either wait until 66 to start yours or start it right away. You know, if you think that both of you are going to live well into your 80s and 90s, yeah, you'd wait till 66 to do it. If you think one of you should live well into your 80s and 90s, but the other one's probably more average. Take yours now, take the spousal when he applies, and then he waits and at age 70 kicks on his full benefit.
So I can take mine now, and then I can take the spousal at any time that I can go from one to the other.
At any time after he has applied.
After he has applied.
Right. And the whole idea of file and suspend and the ability to do what he's going to do in April and why they took it away from us for anybody that's not full retirement age by the end of April is that you will still be eligible for a spousal benefit even though he's not actually receiving a benefit. He filed and then suspended it. So his benefit is going to continue to grow to age 70. But because he's filed, you are going to be eligible for a spousal benefit. If he was not 66 by April, you wouldn't be able to do this.
He had the foresight, Vicki, of being born when he did. I don't know how he did that, but it actually worked out. Timing worked out very well. Hey, I got to take a break. Vicki, if you have some more questions, please hold on. We will talk to you. Mike in Los Angeles, we're going to get to your question as well. Wonderful question so far. Keep up the good work. Once again, we raise the bar. 877-PLANNER, our number, PLANNER. Got a line or two open right now for your money question. That's why we're here, Brain Trust, standing by Johnny Dean, Professor Rick Plum from Lucia Capital Group. It is Bucket Strategy Investing. Bucket Strategy Investing. Right place, right time, here with you, Johnny Dean and Professor Rick Plum, 877-PLANNER. It is, we do have a couple of lines open right now, so give us a call. And before, just very quickly, Professor Plum, on these target date funds, I had mentioned going into one of the breaks that they had lost, on average, according to Morningstar, 22% back in 2008. That's for somebody retiring in either 2000, 2005, or 2010. Do you have a couple of quick ones here?
Well, I was just looking back from Morningstar, and the average return on funds that have a 2001 through 2015 designation, so it could be a 2005, 2010, 2015,
right,
has lost about 5%, and most of that came in the last 3 months. So over the last year, on a 12-month trailing time horizon, they've lost 5%. Those are funds that I've already passed the target date.
Yeah, wasn't this supposed to solve that problem?
And I'm down 5% on money that presumably I'm taking a distribution from. I mean, one of them's 14, 15 years past the date, and it does that. Now, I also looked at 2051 plus, so anything that has a
long
better than
away
2050 fund target date, and they're down on average about 10%. But that's an acceptable amount of risk for a 40-year time horizon.
Because you're going to be buying in along the way. So actually, it helps you. It should help you, 10, 20 years from now. And that was the whole point.
Right. And so I'm accepting a little bit more risk, but I'm going from a 1 or 2 year time horizon to a 40-year time horizon.
Yes.
And so, unfortunately, when you get into the very short time horizons for target dates, that's when it gets a little dangerous, in my opinion.
Exactly. And that's why we're not putting them down, but we're saying the use of them, the way they're intended to be used, may not be the best way to do it. All right, 877-PLANNER, back to the phone lines. Mike, thanks for hanging on in Los Angeles, California. How can we help you today?
Hello. Thank you for taking my call. I just had a question regarding my daughter. She graduated from dental school last year, and she has about $150,000 loan.
$150,000?
About $150,000, yeah.
Wow, okay. All right.
And we are getting letters from these companies to refinance their loan with a lower rate. We wanted to know if there are any drawbacks or disadvantages in doing so. The interest rate they're offering is about 2-3% lower.
Right, and in many cases, once somebody does graduate, it's very common to consolidate and reduce basically refinance them and reduce the. What I want to do is make sure that the time horizon, the repayment period, doesn't shorten up dramatically and make the cash flow a problem. But as long as the payment is becoming reasonable, it's got a reasonable time horizon for repayment. It's a fairly large loan. Saving 2% interest on that size loan is going to make a big difference, 2 or 3%. So do a little bit of due diligence around it. Make sure that they're not shortening the time horizon, which will really hurt the cash flow side of it. Yes, it may be a little bit less expensive from an interest standpoint, but the cash flow may kill her. So you have to just make sure that the payment is in line. And if you can get a lower rate on those things, it's very common to refinance right at retirement or right after retirement, not retirement, excuse me, graduation. Very common to refinance them and get a lower rate. And I think that with that size loan, a couple percent here and there could make a big difference. We're talking thousands of dollars a year in interest.
I see. So there is no disadvantages in doing so.
Only if they charge you fees, which is unusual. If it's a reputable company, if you go through the student loan, the financial aid center, it's through the same basic area, and it's the same time length, everything else, and all they're doing is consolidating and making it a cheaper interest rate, that's fine. There's no problem there.
Are we talking about a fixed interest rate over the life of the loan,
Hope
Mike?
So.
Is that the deal?
They have fixed and variable, but both of them are lower. The fixed rate is about maybe 1-2% lower.
Right.
The only concern she had was, there is a chance that the government may forgive the loan, or they may lower the interest rate themselves. Is that a possibility?
Well, anything's a possibility, and I don't know whether I would hold out hope for that. And, you know, as sure as you stay with the loan she's got, they'll never change them. As sure as you refinance it, they're going to, you know, basically send a letter out and say, we forgave 100% of it. I don't know which way to go from that standpoint, because you can never tell what the government may or may not do. But if it's being refinanced through the student loan, same student loan company through the same area, and it continues to be a student loan. My daughter redid hers, and it's still a student loan through the same company. They just consolidated and put it all together. It's still a student loan. So if they're going to get rid of the student loans or they do something, it's still going to happen to that new loan. If you're going out to some kind of a different type of a loan where you're just, it's not a student loan anymore through the federal government, that's the only problem you have with that. But if it's still a student loan through the federal government, they're just allowing for a refinance. I don't see any downside.
I see. Okay, thank you very much. Really appreciate it.
Okay, Mike, thank you, and thanks for the call, and good luck to your daughter on that.
Yes, and
that's
I was just
a lot
thinking
of money, but
whether she should, you know, he's talking about doing they offering a variable rate or a fixed rate, and that has a lot to do with time horizon. She has a fairly good sized student loan. How soon can she have it paid back? If it can be paid back over the next 5 or 6 years, I'd probably go with the variable rate. Mm-hmm. I don't expect interest rates to rise real quickly. They may rise by the end of the 5-year term, but by then it's on a much lower balance. But if it's going to take me 10, 15, 20 years to get this $150,000 student loan repaid, I'm going to go with the fixed rate, because I do think over that period of time, interest rates will go up. This is a pure guess. I don't have any inside knowledge that interest rates are going to go up. I've thought they should have gone up before now, but I was wrong.
So, well, didn't we said that. I remember back in like 2010 or 11, said, well, if you think rates are going to be this low 5 years from now, forget about it. And, you know, here we are.
Obviously they are. In fact, they may be a little lower.
Yeah.
But the longer it's going to take me to pay this debt back, the more I want to fix the rate. The variable rate did start off lower, he was mentioning. Yes. The fixed rate wasn't quite as low. It was only a point and a half lower than the existing rate. Variable rate being 2 to 2.5, maybe 3% lower. But like I said, if she can have it paid back in 4 or 5 years, man, that lower rate makes a lot of sense.
People are afraid of variable rates now, obviously, because rates are so low, and, you know, why not
potentially go up?
Why not fix it at a relatively low rate right now? But I think what you got to look for on variable rates is how much can it be raised? Because oftentimes there's a cap per year. There's a lifetime cap, which, you know,
Let's say, you know, I start doing it. I'm going to have it paid back in 5 years. I've got a payment plan that's going to be able to pay it back in 5 years, and in the fourth or fifth year, the rate triples. Fine, it triples, but it's on a lot lower balance.
Exactly.
And so I'm not paying that much in interest.
Exactly. All right, we got to take a break here. We've got, if you need the brain trust, you can talk to Professor Plum or any of the advisors at Lucia Capital Group, 800-644-1150. Johnny Dean, Professor Rick Plum, this is Bucket Strategy Investing.
Information presented should not be considered specific tax, legal, or investment advice. You should always seek counsel of the appropriate advisor prior to making any investment decision. All investments are subject to risk, including the loss of principal. There is no guarantee that any investing or financial planning strategy will be profitable, provide protection from loss, or meet its stated objectives. Investment advisor representatives of Lucia Capital Group are also registered representatives of and offer securities through Lucia Securities, LLC, a registered broker-dealer member FINRA SIPC. John Dean is an associated person with Lucia Securities, LLC. In the information presented, the opinions and views expressed are subject to change without notice and may not come to pass. Registration with the SEC does not imply a certain level of skill or training.